So as I said, we're covering, thank you, Brett. As I said, we're covering different topics this quarter and revolving around parenting. And this week we get discipline. So kind of a little early in the quarter, but as we kind of drew straws, who was getting what lessons, and one fell to me. And thought we'd talk about that today. A little challenging, I think, talking about discipline. That's my opinion. Any other agreement in that, thinking about discipline of children? I see some heads nodding. Discipline of children, thinking about that. Why is that? Why is it difficult or challenging to think about disciplining children? One size doesn't fit all. Right, so some of us are blessed to have two kids, right? Are both the kids or more? Some three. Are both the kids the same? Are they all different? Different things work with different ones, right? Some are more hard-headed, and I try not to use my kids as too much of examples and call them out too much. They're not in here today. They're hard-headed in different ways, right? But there's just different challenges with different kids. They're not all the same. It can be difficult, right? Disciplining children, it's ongoing. It seems like it never ends. Sometimes you're successful, sometimes you're not. Sometimes you don't know what to do, so it can be challenging. And Pat and I were talking this morning, even with the differences from small children to older, we have adult children now, I guess you could say, there's challenges there, right? Maybe not so much discipline as they were small, but they're still teaching and discussions and things that you have to deal with at different ages. So it can be a challenging topic, and hopefully you can find some help today. So Psalm 127, and the font always looks bigger in my computer than when I get it on the screen, no matter how big I make it. Psalm 127, we're going to start here. Let's read verses 3 through 5. Who would like to read that for me today? Go ahead, Josh. I'll let you volunteer.
Children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from Him. Children born to a young man are like arrows in a warrior's hands. How joyful is the man whose quiver is full of them. Will not be put to shame when he confronts his accusers at the city gates.
Very good. So what can we learn here? What is said of children? What are they? Yeah, a gift. Verse 3. Heritage, a gift. Some versions say blessing. Some say a reward. Right? So they are definitely that. It says they are like arrows. How are children like arrows? Had to think about this one, right? How are children like arrows? They're sharp and pokey. I don't know, they poke on you. They might do that. I just Googled that. How are children like arrows? And people wrote a bunch of stuff, these long articles about you point them in the right direction like an arrow. And there may be some of that here. I think it's very, my simple mind views it in a simple way. How are children like arrows? Like arrows in the hand of a warrior. And we talk about these children being a blessing. What if you're a warrior without an arrow? If you got arrows, that's a blessing to you. So I think that's the idea. As much as an arrow is a blessing to a warrior, that's how much a child is to a parent. And they're a blessing, even if you might be here and not have children. Children are being around them and seeing their innocence and the joy they bring, that's all a blessing from God, even for those who don't have children. And it says here they bring happiness, and your version might say something different. They can make parents proud, right? And we'll look at some verses, the converse of that. Unruly children can be a burden to a mother, it says. So they can be almost a curse if they're not properly raised and properly disciplined, but they can and do. I think most of us would say at least some point in their lives our children have made us proud, right? We're proud to have them as our children. Look over Genesis chapter 33, if you would, with me. And we're talking about discipline this morning, but I thought it was good to build this foundation before we dig into discipline specifically, and hopefully I won't run out of time. Genesis 33 and verse 5. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children and said, "Who are these with you?" So he said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." So Esau and Jacob here, Jacob saying, "God's been gracious to me. He's given me children. They are a blessing." And then Joshua 24. "Then I took your," verse 3, "Then I took your father Abraham and out from the other side of the river, led him throughout all the land of Canaan and multiplied his descendants and gave him Isaac. To Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau. To Esau I gave the mountains of the Seir to possess, but Jacob and his children went down to Egypt. I also sent Moses and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt according to what I did." Why did I include that verse? He multiplied his descendants. There you go, verse 3. That was why I included that verse. Multiplied his descendants. So just to show that is a gift from God, something God did for them and something God does for us. And then Proverbs 17:6. "Children's children are the crown of old men, and the glory of children is their father." So here it's talking about who? Not just parents, but whom? Grandparents. So they're a blessing from God for parents. They're a blessing from God for grandparents. We have some grandparents here. So children, I think if you asked the most people, they'd say, "Are children a blessing?" Most people would say, absolutely yes, they are a blessing. And a blessing from God. So in thinking about that, I was thinking, okay, they're a blessing from God. God gives us things. He gives us all kinds of things in life, right? Physical blessings, spiritual blessings. I mean, you could stand here all day and name the blessings of God, things God has given us. So what are some things God expects us, he's given us, that he expects us to be good stewards of? And I've revealed one. So just name off some things that we're to be good stewards of, gifts from God.
Time.
One time, money, somebody else,
talents.
You're getting all the ones I've got. One more, and I'll show you what I've got.
The gospel.
The gospel. Very good. So I had the word. That's kind of small. I probably can't. I struggle seeing that. So his word, our possessions, our money, our abilities, our brethren, specifically the elders. Let's talk about being a good steward of brethren, but us. As well, we need to take care of the blessing of this family, our own families, our time, somebody mentioned, and then children are on that list. They're a gift from God, so we should be good stewards of all things God has given us, and children are no different. And we just looked at children are a gift from whom? From God. Those in the Old Testament recognize that. And so we should be good stewards of all these blessings and children. So who's responsible for their children? Kind of an easy question. Who's responsible? Parents, right? What do we see in society sometimes that, as far as who is responsible for children? Who might, if you ask someone in society? Schools. What else? Daycare. What else?
Church.
Government, somebody said, right? Let's look at, let's start here. So that's what people say, but they're our children, our gifts from God, so we're responsible for them. And you see that failure in society, right? That I'm going to put that responsibility on somebody else, the government will take care of them. Well, I'll send them to school and they'll straighten them out. No, it's our responsibility. We'll look at some passages for that. So if we're responsible for our children, who's responsible for the discipline of our children? We are, right? And some people, I've seen that, it's been a long time since I was in grade school, but I would see that people would send their kids to school and, well, I'll let them get whoopings at school or let them straighten them out or put them in some kind of special class so they get instruction from them. And there's nothing wrong with all of that, but a lot of that happens because parents shirking their responsibilities. The raising of children, you should be a good steward of your children, I should be a good steward of my children, so it's our responsibility if we have children to raise them. Now, there can be help from other people, right? There's people in the congregation here can help you with your children. If a child's running into the street, I'm not going to say, "Well, it's your kid." Well, I'm going to run into the street. Now, there's some responsibilities we have just as fellow members, fellow humans, fellow people. But in general, the responsibility of disciplining children is the parents. And we see that, I think, that failure in society. And I've already revealed this, but why are the children the responsibility of parents? Why are the children the discipline responsibility of parents? Why? They're from God, and God said, right? They're from God. So God gives you this gift. You're going to be a good steward of what God has given you. It's your responsibility. Just like my money is not Marlon's responsibility, it's my responsibility to use my money wisely or my time wisely. It's my job to be a good steward of the gift that God has given me in this gift of children. So I thought I'd spend a few moments, and again, because of the lack of personal responsibility we see in society, in looking at personal responsibility. We're going to look at these verses here. Deuteronomy chapter 21. Deuteronomy 21. And verse 18. Who wants to read this? Go ahead. Go to 21. Go to 21.
Okay. Then his father and mother shall seize him, bring him to the elders of the city, the gateway of his hometown. They shall say to the elders of the city, "This son of ours is stubborn and rebellious, and he will not obey us. He is a glutton and a drunkard. And all the men of this city shall stone him to death, so they shall remove the evil from the midst. And all Israel shall hear of it and fear."
Right. And I understand this is most likely an older child here talking about being a drunkard and a glutton, but still, the idea of responsibility. Who's responsible for this child, this offspring here? Mother and father. And it didn't say the elders are come get him and straighten him out. No, it says the father and mother have responsibility to take care of this situation. And it's both of them. It's not just one. So we see that failure, I think, in society. Well, I'll let the mother take care of this discipline. And then I do my own thing as the father, or vice versa. Well, wait till your father gets home and he'll take care of all the discipline. And I do my thing over here. You see the idea of mother and father here. Proverbs 31 and verse 27.
She looks well in the ways of her household and does not eat bread of idleness.
You didn't give me time to get over there, Brad. That was too quick. Proverbs 31:27. She watches over the ways of her house and does not eat the bread of idleness. Again, not specifically talked about discipline here, but you see the mother, the virtuous woman, overseeing her household. She's not just leaving it to the father. She's taking a role in that. So she has a responsibility for her household, for her children. Ephesians 6:4. I'm turning quick so you don't get... Ephesians 6:4. Someone read that. So who's supposed to train up their children? Just the mother? I failed to mention in the beginning, maybe I did a little bit. At times as a parent, you have failures. Anybody not had a failure as a parent? Raise your hand. I'll put my hand down. Right, you do, right? And so sometimes I might have put that off on my wife. You know, you need to teach the children. You need to make sure they're brought up right. I'm busy working or taking care of my grass or whatever. But you see, we've seen father and mother. We've seen mother overseeing the household. We've seen fathers raise their children. We should have looked at this other one when we were back there in Proverbs. But back to Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31, verse 1. Who wants to read that? About the virtuous woman here, but Proverbs 31. Go ahead. So who taught King Lemuel? His mother, right? So I read Ephesians, it says fathers are supposed to do that. Well, no, you read back in Proverbs, when you get to the virtuous woman here, about the mother teaching the king. And then Proverbs 1, I think you're getting the idea. Proverbs 1, 8 and 9. Someone read that. Okay, Jared.
Not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and a pendant for your neck.
Right. So you see the blessings of instruction and discipline that you see for children here, but it's father and mother. So I think it's abundantly clear that it's not just the role of one individual. And it kind of nicely goes along with marriage and the team effort you have in marriage and being joined together and having that organization of marriage. You see that continue to carry on in this raising and discipline of children. It's the father and the mother's responsibility. So fathers, fulfill your responsibility. Mothers, fulfill your responsibility. Work together in this discipline and raising of children. So what is discipline? What is it?
Any form of correction.
Correction. Yep. Yeah. If correction needs to be ministered, what you choose to minister, so there's different forms of it, right? Very good. Anything else? I got some definitions for us, but that's very good. All right. No? Josh said training. So here's one definition. To train someone to obey rules or a code of behavior using punishment to correct disobedience. So there's training involved and punishment involved, not just one or the other. An admonishing or calling to soundness of mind or to self-control. So when you think about children, and I think about raising my own children, this idea of teaching them self-control. So they would throw fits for all kinds of crazy stuff, weird stuff, right? Just for no reason. I'm gonna have a meltdown for whatever. So somehow we've got to teach them to have self-control, to control themselves. I don't know if I have this up later, but why do we instruct them now to do that when they're small? I'm gonna do it when they're older. So what if I wait till my child's five before I ever instruct them to do anything? They've learned this lack of self-control. What if I wait till they're 15 or whatever? By the time they become adults, they're gonna think that's okay. It was interesting. I read the news headlines quite a bit. It was a news headline, had a little video with it. Kid in school, I think he was 15. The teacher took his phone away from him. The kid just hauls off and just slaps the teacher across the face. It was a big kid, tall as the teacher. How does a kid get to 15 years old where he feels okay slapping an authority figure? Right? It was never corrected when he was little. He was allowed to get away with it at some point. Again, there's exceptions to that, but generally it's a progression, right? And I think you see that a lot in society, unfortunately. And that's why I gave you those examples. Hope you read those. Of Hophni and Phineas, right? How did they get to their state that they were in? How did Adonijah, David's son, how did he get to that state he was in where he was trying to usurp the throne? We'll take a look at those if we have time. It wasn't just overnight. It was all started from a most likely a young age. Any thoughts or comments on that?
Everything has to be consistent. I just remember where Josh and I had Hattie. There was a situation that I told him, I said, because of a family, and as always you could hear them behind us going, if you don't quit, I'm going to take you out. They never did. And I told him, I said, well, we have children. And if I say I'm going to take you to the back, I'm going to be consistent with it. Like, it's not going to just be just words.
Right. Right.
As bad as it may hurt us, I mean, you're probably going to say that at some point. I mean, I've heard my mom say, well, this is going to hurt me more than it is you. And I'm thinking, no, it's not.
Yeah, the kid doesn't think that.
It really does.
Right.
Because you don't want to discipline. You want your child to obey. But there's going to be plenty of times to discipline, but it's consistency.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if you can't hear Tiffany, and it is brought up, we'll bring it up later if we get to it, the idea of consistency with your kids. And that's very difficult. Broach that now. Why is it difficult to be consistent with your kids when you're disciplining them?
Inconsistent yourself.
Pardon?
We're inconsistent ourselves.
Yeah, we're inconsistent, right? Why else?
It's hard.
You get, so like, I don't know, whatever they did, I don't know, something, and I correct them, They don't stop. Okay, you're getting a spanking. Okay, they get a spanking. They do it again. They get a spanking. They do it again. I mean, it can go on. Eventually, you get tired of that, right? I've done this enough. Go see your mother. Let her let her whoop on you for a while. I don't know. But it's a challenge, right? It's tough. It's not easy. Yeah, but Jared. Mm-hmm.
You love them. And I think that's, you've seen so about like love in a short term window, compassion, and then there's the love in the long term. Wanting to be a submissive, obedient person. And sometimes the viewpoint from that love shifts and makes it hard.
Right. What does the scripture say? How do we show love to our children? Discipline them, right? That seems counterintuitive to culture that we see around us, that people would tell you, some would tell you that differently. But you love, those you love, you chasten, and the Hebrew writer will talk about that today. Yeah, very good. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
A lot of times children act out to get your attention. You need to pay attention to.
Yeah, so Pam says sometimes children act out to get attention, and that's true, right? So they lack attention, so I'm going to, at least I'm getting some form of attention. It might be scolding or something, but at least my parents are paying attention to me now. So, yeah, I didn't work it in this lesson, but I did think about it. Kids are smart, right? And they can manipulate you, and they can control you. So, hope you don't mind me use Ty as an example. It's good. It's pretty innocent. The other day, we were at the door. Savannah was standing here. I was close to the door, and Gene was close to the door. He wanted me to hold him. Why? He wanted to go outside, right? And then he sees Gene's closer. He wants Gene to hold him. Why? It's closer to outside. That's what I perceive. I don't know if that's accurate or not. That's what it looked like. How old's Ty? One. Kids smart? Yeah. Kids know what's going on. Kids know how to push your buttons, get your attention, all of that. They're not... They're a blessing. So, what does discipline involve? What does it involve? We've talked about it a little bit. What's it involve? Sure. Timeouts. Okay, that's some kind of grounding. That could involve discipline. What does discipline involve? Teaching, very good.
Consistency,
I've got that up there. What else?
Lots of time.
Time, who said that? Yep, right, time. I didn't have that, that's good. What else? Very good, love and compassion, right. I think you got all the ones I had. All right, so Ephesians 6:1, we already read that, we'll look at it again. Oh, thank you. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. And fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. No, that's not what I wanted. 6:1. Children, obey your parents. Oh, yeah, that's what I wanted. You're right, Josh. And your fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, and bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. 6:4. Josh was right. So training, nurturing, instruction, admonition, all different words for this. So there's training involved. It's not just come here and let me spank you. You know, there's training involved. There's nurturing. There's instruction. There's admonition. That's all part of discipline. That's the goal, is to train our children, to instruct them. They need instructing. Foolishness is bound up in their heart. The rod of correction will drive it far from them. They need instruction. Proverbs 3 verse 11. Proverbs 3:11. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction. So the chastening here, I'm told, implies there's some action taking place, some physical correction of some sort. Grabbing them and say, hey, don't go on the street, right? And then the verbal, the correction. Correction and chastening are both involved. So what are the characteristics, as goes into some of the other stuff y'all brought up, what are the characteristics of proper discipline? With love, and not anger. Turn over to Hebrews 12. I said we'd get over there today. A New Testament account of discipline. What is, if you want to read a lot about discipline, read through the Proverbs. I didn't include all the Proverbs on discipline. Some don't use that word, but you can get the idea. So read through Proverbs, but Hebrews 12 is helpful as well. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. So if you love your children, if we love our children, we're going to chasten them, correct them, chasten them. And it's out of love, not of anger. Revelation 3, 19 speaks of that as well. But we can't leave out. So there's some instruction. There's love. There's correction. Please don't do that. Please don't act this way for this reason. God wouldn't want you to act this way. Things like that we would tell our kids. But something that some forget is Hebrews 12, verse 11. Now chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. No chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. And I understand the Hebrew writer is making a spiritual application here between our relationship and God. But that description of that relationship wouldn't make any sense if these other things weren't true about how we raise our children, right? They're both, he's using that truth that when we raise children, we do this and they have this relationship. Well, it's similar to God's relationship with us. So it confirms these things we've already looked at some in Proverbs. But correction, discipline, is at times painful, right? So how, I don't know how to ask, I'll just tell you. So is sending your child to their room, can that be painful? It's not a trick question. It can be, right? Now, if I get sent to my room when I was a kid, maybe I had had an Atari, if anybody knows what Atari is. Video games. I'm going there. Okay, go in there and play your video games. Is that painful? I mean, not really. It might, if your other kids are outside, maybe you want to play with them. Maybe. But in general, that's not a painful thing, right? I don't know. So I'll give an example. Someone can use a whole bunch of examples. But our kids, when we were little, they were little, running around the church building, and I didn't want them doing that because there was older folks. They could trip them and make them fall. We tell them not to do that. Please don't do that. They're playing with their friends. Please don't do that. And then hopefully I said it that nicely. And then if they didn't listen, we'd make them sit on the pew. Come here and sit by yourself because you didn't listen. Is that painful? Yeah, if especially to Chloe didn't care. I don't have to be around anybody. That's fine. I don't care. I don't talk to anybody. Phoebe, she was more social, and I don't want to be with my friends and all of that. So that was painful for her to have to sit and not go and talk to her friends, right? So there's some pain, emotional pain there. So that can be painful. How else is pain meted out in discipline? Spankings, right? And of course, that's part of discipline. We have to talk about that, right? It's got to be painful. So my grandmother had a pillow, it was a pillow on a stick, said grandmother's paddle. It was a pillow on a stick, and it had it embroidered on there, grandmother's paddle. Right, so that's the idea of how a grandmother disciplines, right? Kind of a joke, but was that painful if she was to hit me with that pillow? No. But my mom got a real switch out and put it on my legs. Was that correct? And that worked. It was very, very, I'll tell you, it was very effective for me. It was painful, so discipline, there is a pain aspect, and I think sometimes parents, especially in our society, they forget that part, right? I'll send the kid to their room, and unfortunately part of that might be, I don't have to deal with it anymore, just get away from me, I don't want to talk to you, I'm mad at you, whatever. And there's a cooling off period, I understand that, from your kids can aggravate you. But is that really teaching the child anything? It might teach the opposite, that I want my mom's attention, so I'm going to act up she'll talk to me and interact with me. But there has to be some kind of, the point is there has to be some kind of pain involved. There's training, and if they listen, that's fine. There's no pain necessary. You tell them, clean your room, they clean your room, okay. But when they become defiant, you tell them multiple times, they refuse, you've got to be consistent and carry that out. So back in Ephesians, to find a verse for consistency, there isn't one that says, be consistent that I know of. If you know of one, you can let me know. But I do see it here in this Ephesians 6:4 passage. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. Bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. What does somebody else have besides provoke your children to wrath in your version? Provoke to anger? Anybody else? One version says discourage, I think, or there's another word, it's on the tip of my tongue. Exacerbate. Is that how you say that word? But how would that exhibit itself? Exasperate. Yeah, there you go. If you're not consistent, would that exasperate your children, right? So today you tell them they can't do this thing, whatever it is, and tomorrow you don't correct it. And then the next day you do correct it. And then the next day you don't correct it. The next day you don't. And the next day you do, and they don't listen, and you have to punish them. Is that going to cause anger in your child, exasperate them, cause difficulty, cause challenges? Yeah. So this lack of consistency. And then Proverbs 13, I think you can see the idea of consistency there. And I think Tiffany's right. Big failure with consistency. And we see it in our judicial system and just in society in general, this lack of consistency or this inconsistency. Proverbs 13:24. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Some versions say diligently. So the idea of not, you need to be clear to your kid, right? If you don't get corrected this time, and the next time you do, and next time you wait a day, and the next time, it's just confusing, be confusing to me. And maybe you've been in a workplace where your boss tells you, Patty's dealt with this in her work recently. Somebody tells you, do this one thing, this is how you do it, I do it, and then next time they say, oh, don't do it that way, do it a different way, and the next time they go back to the original way, it's very exasperating, right? It's very, makes you angry, it's very frustrating, so we can relate to that. So we need to be consistent with our kids, consistently in the message that we're putting out to them, consistent in punishment, consistent in correction. Any thoughts up to this point? I've been talking a lot. Yes, sir, Tori. Absolutely. So yeah, consistency with our messages is start with me, right? Very good. Yeah, so if I say don't run in the church building, I'm running all over, my kids probably not gonna listen to that, right? And nobody'd want to see that anyway. Yeah, Brad.
I guess part of this one too, you got teaching consequences along with whatever, name withheld here to protect the guilty, but weren't supposed to happen. So anyway, at that particular moment, obviously it was a good opportunity to take them back in, make them understand, they couldn't take it, the physical distance probably came maybe from the father later in the day when he got home, but doing that at that time just teaching them, you can't just take it, whatever you want.
Right. Yeah, that's the goal, right? You're looking for this result. So there's teaching involved. If the teaching needs to be backed up by some other correction, that might be necessary at times, right? But it's all about, yeah, Bill.
Teaching back in the days that we're talking about in Proverbs, to discipline an unruly child, a child that couldn't be obtained, was to be carried out to a gate and be stoned to death.
Mm. Yeah, I think the idea there in that passage that we looked at, I don't remember what, if somebody can tell me the reference.
What has happened today? I like to think about what today's going on, but what's happening to some children today? What happened to the razor strap? What happened to the paddle that grandma had?
Yeah. Yeah, if you read through the Proverbs, there's no shortage of the physical part of discipline included in the Proverbs on the rod. I think that the point you brought up about the child at the gate being stoned, I think it was an older child there, and that was almost like what we would have today as a government. So you have you correct the child, he won't behave. Now he becomes an unruly person in society. He's a drunkard and a glutton is their sin. But today we would have, what other sins? And they would carry that out as a... Yeah, it's just an overall, like we said, just a lack of discipline. All right.
I think it's also too, just in our world today, so much of our world looks at spanking as abuse.
Yeah.
And so people have to be careful. Like that's I kind of see what he's saying about like where did it stop? Where did we go wrong to where now people think that it's that kind of punishment is considered abuse?
I don't think you can draw a line. Yeah. Like I say, on January 1st, such and such year, this happened. It's just a progression or regression of society, and that's generally what happens in societies, right? It's something becomes not popular, I don't like it. They have a misunderstanding, like Jared said, of what love is. This misdirected view, a short view of love, I want to be a friend with my child. And we do, I think Brian talked about that last week, but you also have to, you're looking for a goal. And what's our ultimate goal? We should probably talk about that. You want them to go to heaven. Right? So, telling your kid not to put their finger in their light socket and correcting that and maybe swatting their hand, could that get them to heaven? I mean, it very well could. If you're consistent with that message that I'm trying to instruct you to be obedient and knowledgeable of, there is a standard that we need to follow and God expects the same. It's going to be something, if it's not finger in your light socket with God, it's something different. But there's discipline, self-control we talked about, and we see a lack of that. And I think it's just, over time, that's tends, not always true, but tends to be the case.
Shannon,
yes, sir?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, we talked about the consistency of the corrective discipline, but Deuteronomy 6, I think, is a great example of just how consistent the instructive part of discipline has to be as well. Starting in verse 6, these words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall find them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. It's every part of your life.
Right.
You know, it's not a coast along until I have to correct something and then keep coasting. I mean, they should understand why they're being corrected, because they knew far in advance what the standard was.
Right.
And that should be, all the whole day. As soon as you get up during the day and as soon as you get down.
That's a good point. So that's what we did for personal examples for our children. We didn't have a different standard for out in public, as home, as church. It was all the same. You act like this, you exhibit this behavior all the time for these reasons. And that message didn't change. It was always, we wanted to act a certain way, and so we could be able to function in society. Good points. All right. I plan to stop 10 minutes sooner and get some of these, but when you look at discipline in Scripture, there's a ton more we can look at. Tons. If you have questions on any of the questions I gave you, I'm happy to discuss those with you. I didn't necessarily plan to get to those today, but I did want to finish on some positive notes. We'll do these until we run out of time. Turn over to 1 Samuel. We talk about a lot of negative, thinking about bad folks in Scripture. Hophni and Phinehas we talked about, Adonijah. And again, that's a great, if you didn't read the Adonijah story, just read that and how far it went to the point that he has to be executed by his brother for trying to usurp the throne. And it all goes back that said he was never restrained. Nobody ever restrained him. So he's like, well, I'll just do what I want. And he tried and ended up in his death. So we think about a lot of those negatives. 1 Samuel 17, you might wonder why you're looking at 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel 17, verse 17. Then Jesse said to his son David, take now for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves and run to your brothers at the camp. Carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their house, their thousands, and see how your brothers fare and bring back news of them. So why did I bring that up about in regard to discipline? We don't got much time. Hurry up. Dad told him what he'd do. Did it. How far? You anybody know how far it was? from where he was starting, from Bethlehem to, I can't remember the name of the place, about 15 miles. So, and he's not an old man, he's a kid. Okay, I want you to take this and go out 15 miles. How long did it take to walk 15 miles? 2 days? Maybe, I don't know, a day? And then come back and bring me news. And David did what he was told. So that's our goal. So I can just tell my child at some point and say David's 15 or whatever, hey, I need you to get this and do this, and they do it. That's from a discipline standpoint. Ultimately heaven, but a discipline standpoint is what we're after. And we know David was a fine character. Genesis 22, anybody remember what that's talking about, Genesis 22? Isaac and Abraham. He's going to sacrifice Isaac, right? And what did he do? Takes Isaac with him, binds him up, puts him on the altar. Is there any indication that Isaac fought that? I don't see any. It's not mentioned. I don't think there was. We're not told, but what's a likely reason there was not fighting back on Isaac's part? He'd been trained. Trusted his father, right? Again, I can't help but think about us trusting our Father in heaven, but and being trained the same. That's what we want for our kids. At some point, how old's Isaac? 12? I don't know. 13? Old enough to fight back. He trusts his dad, and because he'd been trained from a small kid. Samuel, working in the Lord's house as a small lad, doesn't talk about his training there. I don't know how old he was when he went, and all that's not revealed specifically. But he was working in the Lord's house as a small lad. His mom would take him a little robe every year, it said. Little, small kid. How did he get there? He was receiving training somewhere, I would assume from his mother, until he was brought, and then maybe some additional, maybe she corrected him and taught him when she would come see him every year. I don't know. And then last thing, we'll look at Jesus. We're out of time, we'll knock this one out. Luke chapter 2. Luke 2. 51 and 52, then he, Jesus, went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them, but his mother kept all these things in heart, and Jesus increased in wisdom, stature, and favor with God and man. So how did Jesus act with his parents? Subject. What does that imply? Pardon? Obedience. What does it apply on the parents' part? They were for him to be subject to them, they were telling him to do stuff, right? They corrected him. I don't know, again, maybe it's different with Jesus. I don't know what he knew and how if he's a typical teenager and all this stuff, right? But he was at least, as an example for us, subject to their instruction. And what was the result of that? Increased in wisdom, stature, and in favor with God and with men. So is that what we want for our children? Wisdom? You want them to have wisdom? Correct them. Teach them. Teach them self-control. That brings them wisdom. And then have favor with God. Discipline them. Train them. Be a good person in society, in favor with men, Jesus was. He became an upstanding person in society. He trained them. He taught. They trained him and taught him. And that's how he ended up. Any last-minute thoughts? Again, challenging subject. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free. Thank you for your participation.